we used to call those guys 40 milers.
I've heard that one a long time. Yeah.
You know, hey, this guy's a 40 miler. Well, a 40 miler man, a guy that would just come and then go.
So don't be a 40 miler. Stick around, because it's mocha latte time. Coffee with the Clowns this week as we go behind the scenes into Clown Alley. I address podcast nomenclature as well as the coffee scene in Sarasota, Florida, and as always, a brand new hit from Mod Dog coming up next. And welcome to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. This is Circus Boy Nathan coming to you from the Flying Dutchman in Sarasota, Florida this week. The circus is my day job, but I have a passion for coffee. So every week I bring you local coffee scene in the town we're in and cool interviews with coffee people or people that like coffee, whichever happens to be around. And always unscripted, unedited. So if I say something that makes me sound like a coffee bean past the second crack, well, I put it up there. So yeah, this week here in Sarasota, Florida, and what a week. We had, if you listened last week, Piano Man Larry Hunt was on here, and of course we were in Sarasota, and we're still in Sarasota because we can't get on the lot in Daytona till later in the week when we open there. So I'm coming to you from a kind of rainy evening here in the Flying Dutchman. That's my RV that I live in, and it's going to be a good show, man. I'm excited about this show. Got to sit down this week and sit down with the clown and have coffee with the clowns. That's right. Got to go behind the scenes in Clown Alley. So before that bit comes up, in the podcast this week, some good stuff. Got Coffee with the Clowns coming up in like 30 seconds. And also have, I'm going to talk about the Sarasota coffee scene. Had a great find this week. I'm really excited about it. I got to meet some cool people. And then I'm going to talk about podcast nomenclature. You're going to have to stay tuned to hear what that's about. And then, last but not least, a new hit from Mod Dog. So, yeah, awesome show. Good stuff this week. So, Coffee with the Clowns. Did you ever wonder, what it's like? How should I say this? Most people see the clowns in character, but never get to talk to them outside of work, and kind of talk to them as people. And on this show, we got two great clowns, Mitch and Tom, and both good friends of mine. And Tom's also a fellow motorcycle enthusiast, has a BMW. And we got to sit down and had coffee with them, and I found out some new things about them. But let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of a 40 miler or a 1st of May? And these are all circus terms, of course. Well, it's pretty cool. We sit down and talk about everything from, the future of the circus to some, what they had done in the past. These guys are definitely circus veterans, so it's good stuff. Now let me give you the setting, okay? We're in the building, in Clown Alley, which was in a small room. You'll hear it's kind of echoey. It's a kind of a locker room, and all three of us are sitting there. They're each by their trunks, where they get ready for the show and get the makeup and all their props and everything are there. And I made two French presses pots that morning. I had a Colombian and also a Tanzanian pea berry, I believe it was, and that I had gotten from Harbor Roasters in Hershey when I was there a couple weeks ago. So, whipped a couple of those and took a couple mugs over, and, well, this is what we ended up with. Enjoy. Mm-hmm.
USA.
Yeah. On the Ringling Show.
I think that on the Ringling Brothers Show.
Yep, so we're here. That was Tom.
That was Tom. Hello up there,
Don Mile and Copy People.
And I may have to adjust the mic so
it's a podcast.
Yeah.
Hi, Copy People of the world. We're drinking your coffee.
I'm having a peaberry here. Yeah. Not to be confused with teaberry gum, which is a unique flavor, sort of reminiscent of. Well, I can't even remind myself.
Well, I'm having a Colombian over here,
oh.
And I'm having coffee.
Yeah, there you go. That's nice.
Oh, let's not make jokes like that.
No, please don't make jokes in the morning.
Okay.
Can you say something in Colombian, you little dear Colombian?
I like coffee.
So we're here in Clown Alley, and Clown Alley, I guess with Tom Daugherty and Mitch Freddis, and they are the star clowns of our show.
Only clowns.
The only clowns.
Yeah, we say the other one sounds better.
Yeah, it lifts us up a notch.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get paid more.
Yeah.
And we're here on a Sunday morning in Clown Alley. And for you guys, the people who don't know out there listening around the world, what is Clown Alley exactly?
Clown Alley, I'll give you the brief definition in the dictionary, and then I'll let my friend Mitch expound on the origins of the word. Clown Alley is either a collective noun for all the clowns on a show.
Uh-huh.
It is also the where the clowns dress. It's another name for their dressing room. Mitch, take it away.
All right. Well, those old-timers, Tom and I worked with all them old-timers back in the day, and they used to explain it like this. In the old tent days, because of the amount of baby powder and makeup and stuff that the clowns used, they didn't want to get it all over the costumes and all over everything, so they used to actually put them in the back of the tent in a little alley back there, and that's why it became known as Clown Alley. And ever since then, the clowns have always been separated from everybody else, and it has become a place of magic and mystique. So,
and because of that, in the old days, no one was allowed in Clown Alley.
And right.
Even the clowns' wives and children, no one was allowed in the alley because it was a very special place. Only if there was a unified okay from every person sitting in the dressing room was somebody allowed in. So, Mitch, is it okay that our friend Nathan come in with coffee?
Oh, yeah.
Bro. All right, you're in. Woo!
And nowadays, of course, we have girl clowns, which we didn't have so much back then. And so they have created, like, co-ed clown alleys and stuff.
Back when I was on the show, we had, like, four or five female clowns.
Really?
They had their own dressing room.
Right.
For a while, they put them with the showgirls, but then they actually gave them their own clown alley. But nowadays, on the big show, they have a co-ed, which is just,
we'd
have to censor that. And then
Clown Alley used to be, Clown Alley was like your local barbershop. You know, the guys would get there and tell jokes and blah, 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 blah. There wasn't any room for women to be here.
You didn't have to watch your behavior, so to speak. It's a bunch of guys. All that kind of crap. Yeah.
But now,
now the girls are like that too, so who cares?
Yeah. But, it's kind of lost some of that stuff. But, Tom and I, because we're the two of us here, we take a unanimous vote and say, hey, can this person come in, that person come in?
Yeah.
And we like your coffee.
Right. And we still do not really, really advocate any kind of photography or anything like that in here.
Right.
That all we try to keep.
There is something special about the transformation from a man into a clown. We still like to keep it because it's part of the spiritual edge, if you will, of clowning.
Now, this whole time that they've been talking, they've been putting on their makeup and putting on their noses and getting their costumes ready, really going through that transformation of, person to clown right in front of my very eyes. Really cool. Now, check out this next bit where they talk about some of the old days, old school clowning. So, good stuff.
We were right. Tom and I were very fortunate because we got into the business right at a time where it was a transformation out of the tent era into the so-called building era. So him and I were really fortunate to work with a lot of people, and not just clowns, but performers and generational families, even working guys that had been here since the golden age, which would have been probably in the 30s, from the 30s up to about the 50s.
Circus was more of a career option then.
Right.
Now, even amongst the, certain performers, of course, are still generational, but clowns, it's more of a stepping stone to other parts of the entertainment field. Very, very few clowns go into it now as a career. Even the working men, all the working men, we joined the show in the 70s, and all the working men there had been there for years and years and years, and now, most of them come in, all of our lighting and sound guys, they've never been to a circus before. Never been in a circus, because it's being run more like a theater.
Right.
Most of them want it now to have it on their resume and go other places, even with clowning. There's so many other opportunities, TV,
well,
video.
Your performance director is a 26-year-old boy right out of college, right. Whereas our performance director, when I came on the show, was Bob McDougall, who was part of that Greatest Show on Earth movie display they had at the museum.
Uh-huh.
Bob McDougall owned the model trains they used for the train wreck. Those were his. So he was our performance director. He was also a big circus fan, but he'd been in the circus for 20 or 30 years. When I came, and now he's retired. His wife worked in wardrobe.
It was funny because when you came here, man, as a what we called a first of May, which was a term. And that came about because of, used to be the season ran from May until May. They would open up in New York, Madison Square Garden in May, and then do about an 8-week run there so that by the time they were done there, the weather was nice, and then they would get into their tent and continue on. So if you made it from one May to the next May, then it was like you were accepted. And that held true even in my day. When I came on the show, those old timers and those people really did not even acknowledge you for the entire first year. But if you made it past that first year and you came back, man, you were just, you were everybody's best friend. And Tom and I still kind of hold that when new people come on the show.
I don't do a whole year.
I don't do a whole year, but there is a period.
I came later in the 70s, and they were, which was a difference in later on is, actually, in the 80s and 90s, they used to abuse those first of May's all year long, give them all the crap jobs and things.
Right.
When I joined the show, it was about 2 months of that, where you got teased, you got all the crap work. But if you could hold yourself up for about 2 or 3 months, then they would welcome you, and then they would start to teach you. And that was the main thing. Then they would open up and they would talk to you, because generally here, I've been saying, I'd say, have to give me about 2 or 3 months to prove that you really are going to embrace this lifestyle, stick around, and give yourself to the show. Because all of us, whether we're musicians, clowns, lighting people, we all serve the same purpose, and that's the show. And that's one of the things I love about circus, is that it truly is a communal effort.
Right.
And the show, as you know, is more than just the show. It's the whole lifestyle surrounding the show. Everything supports that. And you want to make sure you're in the company of people who are dedicated to that.
Yeah.
So I like to watch, because a lot of guys come and go. They come out here and then they see how hard the lifestyle can be, and they leave.
We used to call those guys 40 milers.
I've heard that one in a long time.
Hey, this guy's a 40 miler. Yeah. Well, a 40 miler man, a guy that would just come and then go, So until you really prove that you're going to stick around, Tom and I still kind of reserve that, I'm kind of give them a test and see whether, because like I said, especially now with video and everything, that's, everybody wants to get into those markets because there's a lot more money in it.
Oh, yeah.
And, but, there's other satisfactions out of being with the circus. Him and I have been doing it for so long. It's our life. It's a way of life for us. It's not just
There's nothing like a live audience. There's nothing like circus. Circus is a very magical type of performance. It celebrates all the positive attributes of being human. the desire to go to the moon. Well, you can see that in the guy trying to do the triple somersault. And he's literally pushing our envelope of what we're capable of doing. And we as a collective in the audience, all of us are standing on that pedestal waiting with, you know, bated breath to see, is he going to make it? And that's why there's such a big response when he does, because all of us feel a sense of success and accomplishment in our souls when he does. The same token, in our striving to do that, we all make mistakes, like the clowns, and the clowns provide that laughter, which is the balance to life. If you don't have a sense of humor, you are out of balance, period. And you know who I'm talking about. I mean, anybody who just can't, who takes life way too seriously, isn't really going to enjoy it fully. So I think the circus embraces all of those attributes, and that's why I really love it.
And the clown really has to experience a lot of life and a lot of things, because they touch on every single emotion of a person, you know, and to be able to bring that person into your world takes years and years of experience and just doing it, you know. It's not something that can be taught. And speaking of teaching, that's another thing. There's really no, very few, I have to say, clown schools. Absolutely none that teach them about road clowning and circus clowning. Most of it's birthday parties and things like that.
And, you know, I hate to say it, but a lot of the smaller circuses get sponsored by the Shriners, who are a very, you know, great organization, but they have their own clown.
Right.
And so they don't hire clowns.
Okay.
So within the shrinking circus world, the clowns have it even smaller than anyone else, because we can only get the jobs on the big show like this, or, you know.
Even on the smaller shows anymore, I mean, the seasons aren't as long,
right.
So it's hard to, you know, book a whole season. Sometimes you have to do two circuses in a year, you know, two full seasons in a year just to book that whole year up. And then, of course, you know, the circus has so many outside influences that are working against it. The animal rights people, you've got the economy, you've got gas prices. And just to move a show anymore is extravagant amount of money.
Yeah. So it's not just, as some people might believe, just greedy owners. That's been a part of circus forever.
Right.
It's really the times are just, you know, a circus is going through an evolution. That's all. It's not really dying, it's just sort of changing. And look what Soleil has done, you know, taking circus to another level of an artistic expression, if you will, and they're doing very well.
Ringling Brothers still is the only entertainment, especially live entertainment, that travels by rail still. They've been able to maintain that, but those days are probably going to go too, you know. Because it's just getting an exorbitant amount of money to run it on rails. Our particular show runs on trailers, or what they call a truck show. Because it is small, we're able to do that. But the bigger units, they carry 300 to 400 performers, where we have maybe 100 people in the entire show. So that's staff and performers. So for them, and they own all their train cars, so for them, you know, the expense is down as far as owning them and the you know, having to buy them and stuff, but the transportation nowadays is just getting crazy for the trains.
Yeah.
As there's less and less lines available, well, you know, there's not as many passenger lines as there ever were. And so now they run a lot on the freight lines. Well, even the freight lines are getting less and less. You know, as you see more and more airplanes and stuff shipping things, I mean, they went over to Japan and were able to put elephants on an airplane, you know. So, those kind of things, too, are really putting an effect on the business.
Right. Yeah, well, even on the music aspect of things, too, I mean, I think Ringling is one of the only shows left that actually hires live music.
Absolutely.
Well, Soleil has live music.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They're really all the circuses, that's it.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, kind of sad, and I can see why the other shows do it money wise, you know, but.
But there's something about a live band that makes a show complete.
Well, there were a couple years ago, I remember we were playing in New York, and man, there was a big musicians strike up there. And we came to town, and that was one of our advertising ploys was, we're the only live show in town with live music. Yeah. You know? And because we were able to keep our guys, because our guys travel with us, they weren't out of that local or whatever, so they didn't have to join in the strike. But yeah, so, yeah, we're still here. We're going to keep being here.
Good stuff, good stuff. Now, I have to apologize for the couple times that the mic peaked out there. We're sitting in a... I only have one mic right now for the podcast, so I had to set the sensitivity really high. So I apologize that there were a couple times that it peaked out there. And there's also the blower in the background. But hey, it's, you know, it's podcasting, it's live. So it's part of the fun. But yeah, good stuff. So that's part one. I'll put on part two here right after I do the Sarasota coffee scene. Now, first off, Sarasota, man, it was a busy week this week. I had we had a wedding actually on the unit. Two people from our teeter board troop got married this week, so busy week. We had a big deal, as I mentioned last week, first time in 50 years, I believe, that since Ringling has been in the area. So pretty high profile, and I got to visit the folks over at the Show Folks of Sarasota. It's kind of a club bar. It's the only one in the world for circus people, so that was definitely cool. They have a lot of the old school circus photos of stars and kind of families from circus all the way back. I don't know. Really, I saw some stuff from the early 1900s, so very, very cool, very cool. But Sarasota, just as a town, quickly, as a town itself, it's kind of interesting. There's definitely a lot of snowbirds down here, a lot of people that retire down here, but it's a stark contrast, because you kind of have, like, the young, I don't know if you say yuppie kind of generation of people, you know, young professionals, and then you have, like, definitely the people that are retired and have a lot of money, and... yeah, so it's, and I don't know, and then you have the people who are kind of, I guess, that work, you know, at all these hotels and restaurants, and there's a couple colleges in town. There's the Ringling Art School, but yeah, it's an interesting town. A lot of the history of the town being built was built on almost by the Ringlings, John and Charles. Part of the Ringling brothers did a lot to build the city up and bring business here and kind of make it a destination. I mean, obviously, you have the weather that makes it an attractive place, you know, being on the west side of Florida and, you know, being pretty moderate sunny weather most of the year. But John, I believe it was John Ringling, moved the winter quarters down from Baraboo, I believe it was from Baraboo, Wisconsin, down to Florida here, and this was kind of the mecca, I guess, for circus, and it was a really big deal. I forget how many months they were down here, but you could come and see winter quarters in person, and see the new acts, and come see the Clown Alley, and the clowns performing, and see the grounds with the animals, and it was just really neat thing, and it brought a lot of business down here. And nowadays, it's definitely a vacation destination. You have the Ringling Museum, which they just opened a whole new, the Tibbles Learning Center, which I got to visit this week, and it's amazing. I wouldn't say if you have a fascination with circus, but, you know, if you're curious about circus at all, you pay $15 to get in for adult, and they have the new Tibbles Learning Center, which is I think a 3,300 square foot miniature, I believe it's 1/8 scale, circus from, it's a replica circus from the 1930s, which was kind of the golden, they call it the golden era or the golden age for the Ringling Circus, and it's just amazing the detail. So they have that, as well as a lot of the Circus Museum has a lot of artifacts, like, you know, jackets, Lou Jacobs' car, and then there's the house of John and Mabel Ringling, which is I believe it's pronounced Cartesan, and then John Ringling's art collection. He was quite the art collector as well. And so it's definitely something to check out. If you are anywhere in the neighborhood, if you come down to go to Disneyland, make the trip. It's only about maybe an hour and a half, I think, from Orlando. And it's definitely worth the trip to come down and see Sarasota and the John and Mabel Ringling Museum. And got over there. They also have an international movie. And they have the Historical Solo Theater, which was a theater that John Ringling had bought in Italy. Had been disassembled, and they brought it over to Florida, and reassembled it. And now they show they have a movie festival. I saw La Strada by Fellini there just on Monday night. So good stuff. And there's also there's the Siesta Keys out there, Longboat Key. There's the Moat Marine Aquarium, and there's the downtown Sarasota as well. A lot of nightlife. You go down Ringling Boulevard, or even go down Main Street, and which goes east-west, and then kind of between Washington, which goes north-south, all the way over to like Palm, Coconut, Osprey. All those streets right in there is kind of a really cool little downtown area, excellent restaurants, and cool little nightlife. So definitely something to check out if you get into Sarasota. But more importantly, the Sarasota coffee scene. Well, I have 6 places that I visited this week. And I would have to say there's definitely one that sticks out, and I'm going to save that for last because it was pretty cool find. So first off, the Pastry Art Bakery and Cafe. Now it's right there in the downtown. I wrote nothing special here. It was served. Oh, by the way, before I launch into the reviews, quickly, you can the bean scale. There's been some confusion on that. That's listed something I just came up with. And it's listed on the website at bestmochalatte.blogspot.com. It's on there. Okay, Pastry Art Bakery and Cafe. Nothing special here, I wrote, was served in-house cup, but pretty much no foam. They used powdered chocolate, and hence the kind of weird texture into it. They didn't let it emulsify, I think, enough. Almost gritty. The espresso taste was blah, but they did ask on whipped cream, so I gave them a 3.1 beans. Next up, Sarasota Joe's, which is also downtown there, kind of a business spot. I forgot to describe Pastry Art Cafe, Bakery and Cafe. It's kind of a, it's definitely kind of a business spot where a lot of people come for lunches. It's not exactly like a nighttime kind of coffee hangout. It's definitely more of a breakfast, lunch kind of place there. They do have seating inside and some tables outside as well. So next up, Sarasota Joe's. This is even smaller than the Pastry Art Bakery and Cafe. This place, Sarasota Joe's, kind of a hip feel to it, retro. They had like the, I don't know how to describe it, the half curb chairs, and had kind of cool lights and like flat screen TV. So definitely kind of the retro club kind of feel to it. I wrote on their drink here, it was sweet, too sweet as a matter of fact, served in auto to go cup. It had okay foam, but too much of it, too much sweet chocolate syrup, could hardly taste the espresso, and I wouldn't drink it again. So I gave them 3.0 beans. Next up, It's a Grind Coffee House. That's which I believe is a franchise operation. And it was right there on, what was the name of the road? I can't remember. But it's definitely south Sarasota, southern Sarasota area, and a shopping mall there. I wrote so-so to blah. It was poor, non-existent foam, average espresso, chocolate, nothing too special here. Served auto to go cup. They did ask on whipped cream. So that's It's a Grind Coffee House, and that was right there on southern Sarasota, and it's kind of cool feel, a couple chairs and tables, very friendly people that worked the place. It definitely had a jazz theme to it, very mute colors, kind of gray colors to it. So, you know, a kind of relaxing atmosphere right there in the mall. Next up is Simon's Coffee House. Now, this place was down on Tamiami Trail, and it was kind of in a strip mall kind of place, and I was there during the lunch hour, and they definitely have a big lunch crowd. You kind of go in, and it's kind of more of a cafe than a coffee shop, and they have like a full sandwich menu and so forth. But as far as the drinks, well, I wrote weak as a spineless jellyfish, bitter espresso, asked on to-go cup, so-so foam, average chocolate, perhaps powdered maybe, not worth the price, I wouldn't drink again. So I gave them a 2.8 beans. And it looked like they had like a single single group espresso machine. It looked like they didn't really do that much espresso, more of just kind of like the flavored coffees type of thing there. So that was Simon's Coffee House. Next up is Latitude 23.5 Coffee and Tea. Now they seem to be the main supplier of roasted coffee for the Sarasota area, really. And I'm not sure if they originated in Sarasota or not. I couldn't tell from the website. But they have a couple of their own, besides being a major distributor of roasted coffee and tea, and well, they don't roast teas, but of teas, they also have a couple of their own coffee shops. And so I visited one there down in southern Sarasota there, and I wrote about the drink. Well, better than the other Latitude bean-based drinks I tried. It was served out of to-go cup. They asked on whipped cream. Espresso taste was okay, a little bit of a bitter edge to it, average foam, and chocolate was so-so, so I gave them a 3.6. So the place itself, was it was a nice little coffee shop there. You know, had couches, kind of some toys for the kids, had a lot of coffee to choose from, a lot of flavors, definitely a lot of, since they are a major roaster for that area of Florida there, they definitely had a big variety in whole beans choices. I was looking at some of their stuff. They had organics. I didn't really have an urge to buy anything, but definitely had a large variety there. As far as freshness, I don't know. I don't know how much, you know, since it's a large roaster, I assume they do pretty good volume, and so they keep fresh beans. But yeah, next up, the Jolly's Gelato and Espresso. This was a little place there in I believe on the corner of, was it Main and Palm, I think Palm Street, or maybe Pineapple. I don't know. They're named after fruits. But it's right next to Epicure Restaurant. I think they're run together. So, yes, Jolly's Gelato and Espresso. Their drink I wrote here, a sloppy imposter. They used old Ely coffee, so the taste is really weak. Really loose foam. Served auto to go cup. Used Hershey's syrup, which I wrote yuck. So the chocolate was weak. And it was what I wrote here. Some I can't even read my own writing. I was that disgusted with it. So it was almost fake tasting. There we go. Espresso was blah. So I wrote, try the gelato, not the coffee. So I gave them a 2.1 beans. And they are more of a gelato place. I think the coffee was kind of an afterthought. I think they just wanted kind of something to round out the Italian feel of the restaurant. And so I mean, it has nice booths, you know, kind of old vintage art kind of posters, ad posters on the wall, nice display case, nice pastries, but the coffee was definitely lacking there. So, and last but not least, I know this is number 7, I had the wrong count, so I said 6, is Metro Coffee and Wine. And I have to say, I was delightfully surprised by this place. This is definitely a find. I wrote here on the review, yes, this was a satisfying drink. Served in-house cup, nice foam, very nice espresso. Twas Counterculture's Toscano, good stuff. And had etching to top it off on the drink. The only thing that could have been better was the chocolate. They use Torani, and I'm still not a fan of Torani chocolate sauces. But it was definitely one of the best that I've had in Florida since I've been in Florida. So I gave them a 4.3 beans. And they're definitely doing good stuff. They've been open, I think it's a little bit over a year. I want to send a shout out to Hillary and Betsy when I was there. And very cool people, very knowledgeable about coffee. And they also do sandwiches and soups as well. And there's a lot of attention to detail with the food and the coffee, which is nice. They had a three-group La Marzocco machine, beautiful machine there. And which that doesn't, as my experience, it doesn't always guarantee a good shot, because you know ultimately it's up to the barista. Of course, but yeah, doing good things. I was pleasantly surprised. They're very cool atmosphere. They have sofas. They also have chairs, and also have some counter seating. So if you just want to grab your espresso and drink it Italian style, standing up on the go, you can do that, which is, you don't find that too often. Very cool, and they have a full wine list as well. So yeah, it's definitely, if you're coming to Sarasota, can only visit one coffee place, that would be my top pick for Sarasota. So definitely a good find, surprise find. We'll definitely try to visit that one again out of all the places in Florida. So that wraps up my Sarasota coffee scene review for this week. And I'll tell you about up and coming towns here after part two of Coffee with the Clowns and Clown Alley. And in part two, we're going to talk about kind of what a clown does and technology and all that good stuff. So, yep, this is part two. Enjoy. I'll be back.
Now, to give everyone an idea of where we're sitting today, we're in Clown Alley this week. Is in a, what is this, like a locker room, right?
Oh, yeah. We're actually under the seats right now. The guy up there is cleaning, and he keeps blowing stuff down on top of us here.
Yeah, so you can probably hear the... this is very special because of Sarasota. Sarasota, Florida, as we all know, Circus Town USA, founded by the, basically put on the map by the Ringling Brothers. Oh, yeah, John Ringling.
Yeah.
First time now in, 48 years that Ringling has been back in town. He used to be with the Winter Quarters. That's why so many circus people live here, is because this is where they'd come to winter. They all bought homes here, and now their second and third generation of the families are still here. So it's a great honor for us to be back here, but Sarasota is a little bit of a small town, and they're building here. There's only two dressing rooms in the whole freaking building. You know, the rest of you guys are out in another outbuilding.
Yeah.
Clowns have to be close at hand, because if, God forbid, anything happened in the circus, which you know does happen on rare occasion, but the show has to go on and they have to send in the clowns. So we have to be ready, listening to the music, because when the music goes into that 12th Street rag, we know something's happening, and the clowns just have to run out on the floor and do stuff till the music stops, and we can go on to the next act. And so we're one of the only ones who will get, you know, the dressing room, and of course, I guess John and Sylvie get the other one.
I think some of the hardest things we do have to do is, because when there's not necessarily an accident, but it could even be just a rigging problem. But in the case of an accident, we don't only have to go out there and work while they, you know, correct things, but then after that, then it's up to us to keep the morale of the show going backstage. So we have a big role as far as, you know, if there is an accident and people obviously are going to have a hard time with it, then we not only have to experience the hard time with everybody else, but we also have to try to keep people's spirits up. So, Tom and I have been on, you know, shows where there have been those cases, and they'll flat come to us and tell us, look, you guys have to stay in your costumes all the time and stay at the back door totally for these people. And for like a month.
That's after it doesn't die.
Yeah, but
extreme case.
Yeah. Right, but you know we do. That's another role that we have, and just generally, I guess, keeping the morale of the show going. They think that we're funny all the time, but that's not necessarily the case either. You know that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's why if you make a service person laugh, it's the biggest compliment, because they've seen it all.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Get the heck out of my way, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. I got to slide out here and get a new shirt for the day.
Yeah. Oh, you're all right.
Okay.
Yeah, we're sitting here, like I said, in the room. We've got the curtains up, and each of the guys have their own truck. And I guess that's kind of like your own...
That's our home.
That's what we were saying when we were talking about coffee. In the old days, the old guys in their trunk would have a little hot plate, coffee pot. So, as you saw when I walked in with my Picon coffee, which I immediately put down seeing that you had your French press here. It's part of the deal. You get dressed, you have your coffee. Mitch and I are very fortunate because we both do come from the same background and era of clowning. That we just sit here and talk clowning.
Right.
That's the thing. After I've been in it 29 years, he's been in 32 years, but we're always looking at each other's work. We're always sounding ideas off of each other. We grow. I've become a better clown in the last 3 years because of working with Mitch Reynolds.
Right, and I'm the same way with him.
And it's a shame now in the alleys on the big shows that they don't have a lot of experienced clowns. The longest tenure of any clown in now is like 6 years.
Right.
Between
the two of us, we've got more experience than all the clowns on either show, and that's like...
And that's 25 clowns.
That's like 25 clowns.
Because we have 60-some. I mean, because most of them stay a year ago.
Right.
And there's nobody there like us who are kind of just keep forgetting. We're the old-timers now.
Yeah, we're all
there's no one there to say, hey, look, kid, do it this way. You'll get a better laugh, or... let me hear your idea.
And then on top of it, we also have John Weiss here, who was a Clown College graduate. He's gone on to be our host now, but if you include him in his experience, there's another 26 years there. So between the three of us, three Clown College graduates that are on the show right now have more combined experience than all three of the other shows. So.
It's how it affects the business, because when there's not anyone to pass it on and to train the others, the business will slowly die. This part of it, at least.
Sometimes Tom and I think we're the only ones that care about that.
Oftentimes. We like tradition.
We
think it's important. It kind of gives you a focus on your future. As well as it's like a rear view mirror, if you will. You can't drive a car forwards unless you have a rear view mirror. How do you know where you're going unless you know where you've been?
Right, yeah. And I think it seems like, I don't know if it's worldwide, but at least in this country, there's been a certain, I guess there's so many distractions today, like you were saying, with the media and, media options, like as outlets. Yeah. And, people kind of tend to glance over tradition or not see the value of tradition. Because, there was a reason that it was, very popular at one time just because it was good.
Right.
it was a quality thing, and I think that's one thing that's kind of...
It is, and you can get old, crusty, and complain about it, from a lot of different points of view. Or there's another way I look at it is that it's just part of the evolution. Eventually, the people have to reject that which has been proven in order to go on a journey to reprove it again. I don't have to listen to that. And then as they learn more, they'll realize that, hey, those guys were right. So it kind of goes through a period of that. And I think as a culture at large, we're kind of doing that, because there's a lot of stuff that we're just sort of dismissing that we should not be dismissing.
Yeah.
But look at this. We're talking to a little box here that's going to go worldwide. Things have certainly changed.
Yeah.
Now, how do we utilize that?
I remember on the train, I had a girlfriend one time, and I was just obsessed with this girl to the point that if I didn't call her at least every single day, so we'd be riding on the train. If it was a water stop, where's the phone? I'd run out there, and I would make sure before I left town that I had two or three rolls of quarters, so I could make that phone call. Now you got cell phones. Even on the train, we didn't we didn't have videos and stuff, so you really didn't watch TVs. I mean, even color TVs.
If someone had a color TV, crap, you weren't on the set.
Yeah, no, not anybody had color TVs.
That's just because you're poor. No. Color TV was when it came out in the 60s.
I know it did, but
now I will say VCR, VHSs were not out.
Yeah, well, forget
it
those.
Was beta.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but they were not part of the, you know, it's just something, oh, this new thing came out as a luxury item. Now these things are not.
Yeah.
You know, it's so, like the old honeymooners line when he gets a phone, you know, or when Alice wants the phone, and he goes, yeah, she just, oh, Ralph, you know, the phone's not a luxury anymore, it's a necessity. And that's sort of what's happened.
Yeah.
It's for you, you, you. One of my favorite lines in that.
But now it's gotten to the point where, I mean, geez, if you're not wired up to something, you're not, right. You know, you're not in tune with things.
So. That is opening of doors, so we
We have to go. That's it. Was nice talking to you. We loved your coffee. We'll rinse your cups out and get them back
later.
You want to finish off the coffee?
Alright, welcome back. So that was a good time. I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I enjoyed sitting down with those guys and recording that. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We went on to play two shows that day and close up here in Sarasota. Now, if you want to send any comments to those guys, or even leave a voicemail if you want, or even for me for the podcast, you can go to bestmochalatte.podomatic.com, and that's you can go on there and you know, leave a comment. I always try to put a picture from that episode up there every week, and we can even become a fan of the show, sign up for the mailing list, or I also have links on there to some other coffee stuff, like you know, Google Earth to search coffee shops, or there's an espresso map that someone sent to me the other week, good stuff. Or you can even call in. I have a phone number. It's 206-202-1444, and that's an American number. So if you're calling from overseas, you'd have to do the country code and everything. But you can call in there and leave a comment for Tom or Mitch, or even for the podcast. And then, of course, always I put the coffee reviews up on Best Mocha Latte. Let me just try rewind. Okay, it's bestmochalatte.blogspot.com. And I have the bean scale up there, and I have the full written reviews and everything. So now. Talking about the blog and this podcast and just all these things in general, I ran across a blog in the blogosphere this week that I don't know, kind of ripped the podcast a little bit for being called using the word mocha latte. Now, I first off want to talk, you know, I'm talk about the podcast nomenclature, the whole mocha latte thing. First, the concept of this podcast is, first off, to find new coffee shops and meet new people and find the best coffee shops, and hopefully, you know, if you're traveling, you can go on to my Blogspot page and look up a state, look up a city, and say, oh, what's the best, you know, coffee shop in that city. And so that's the first thing. Second thing is, most of the time, you know, these places that if they get a low bean rating, you know, say a coffee shop gets like a 2.0 beans, which is, you know, that's pretty low. You have to make a pretty bad mocha latte in order to get that low rating. That doesn't mean that the people that run the shop are bad people, or that they're unfriendly, or they gave bad service, or that the environment isn't great. I've been to some really nice looking coffee shops that serve kind of crappy mocha lattes. Now, I leave the choice up to you. I mean, you can go, if you want to go for a great environment and a so-so coffee, that's great. and you like the coffee there, that's great. I have no beef with that, you know. I always say drink what you like what you drink. And yeah, I mean, if you like to drink Folgers, great, you know. I'm not, you know, trying to make you, you know, twist your arm and say you must drink, you know, a ristretto, you know, shots of espresso, or, you know, you have to drink only a 25-second extraction of, you know, whatever's roasters, you know, ground at such and such. No, I you know, drink whatever you like, you know. And on that same note, why did I choose the mocha latte as the thing that I review? Well, I like coffee and I like chocolate, you know, so it seemed like the perfect combination, which is a mocha latte. And my reasoning was, you know, since any espresso drink takes some degree of, you know, the barista has to have some artistic ability to do that, because not everyone can pull off a great latte or even a great mocha latte. And so if a cafe can make a pretty banging mocha latte, then it's pretty safe to assume, at least in my judgment, that everything else, you know, in that cafe will follow suit. And to my experience, that usually has been the case. Now, why do I call it a mocha latte? Well, you know, purists will say there's the cafe mocha, you know, cafe latte, which latte, you know, all these terms come from Italian. The original is Italian. Latte means milk. Cafe means coffee. So, you know, some people say, you know, you should order a if you're going to get a latte, you should say a cafe latte, which you'll see at, you know, a lot of coffee shops. Now, for a mocha, they say you should call a mocha a cafe mocha. Now, if you want to be a purist, that would be coffee and chocolate. And so, you know, it's like, not my opinion, that it's not as specific. You know, do you say a cafe mocha latte? A cafe latte with chocolate syrup in it, or do you say plain mocha? I mean, the word mocha in the first place comes from, you know, a place in Yemen, which has nothing to do with chocolate. It was just that the coffee from that place had a kind of hint of a chocolate note to it, you know. So I don't know. It's dividing hairs. The reason I call it a mocha latte is because there's no confusion that way. And it's, you know, moderately accepted. And, you know, Americans are kind of, as to my knowledge, and if you're listening from around the world, please correct me, because I'm all about learning new things. But, you know, Americans are pretty much the main people that drink the mocha, or the cafe mocha, or the cafe mocha latte, or the cafe latte with chocolate syrup, or the mocha latte. And the reason I chose mocha latte is because it's the clearest way to express it, and it's easier to roll off the tongue, you know. If I called it the search for the best, you know, cafe latte with chocolate syrup in the world, that doesn't have quite the same ring as mocha latte to me. So, is it by purist standards 100% correct? Perhaps not, but I never claim to be an expert. I just drink a lot of coffee, and I have a passion for coffee, and I enjoy podcasting, you know. And this, you know, a lot of stuff I put up on here, you know, is from my own research. And, you know, I'm human like everybody else. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I believe back, if you go back into one of the Bean to Bowl series, I think I said that I pull shots at 190 degrees Fahrenheit, which was the temperature that my espresso machine at the time did pull shots, but that's not the optimal brewing temperature. You know, so I'm open, you know, to suggestions and learning, and I'm human. I'm not perfect, and I'm learning with you guys. I created this podcast for just people who like coffee, not necessarily people who have been in the business or people who are experts. If they listen, great, you know, but I just created this as kind of a place for people who enjoy coffee and like to travel. So that's all I have to say about that. So if you don't like the podcast, I'm sorry. You can make your own podcast and be, you know, maybe have better research and be 100% on, you know. I try my best with what I have, and always enjoy talking, you know, and getting suggestions and, you know, improving the podcast. So search for the best mocha latte. It will remain. It will stay. All right. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening, wherever you're listening from in the world. I'm sitting here drinking my coffee and in a rainy, I don't know if you can hear the rain, a rainy Sarasota. Next week is going to be Daytona Beach, Florida. And the following week after that, we are going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina for 2 weeks. And I'm excited about that. I'm going to be visiting the Blue Show and get to see some friends over there. May have a surprise podcast guest from up there. So you just have to stay tuned to find out what we actually come up with for next week. So I have a new hit from Mod Dog this week, kind of chill. From his new program on his computer there. Good stuff, really good stuff. I really like what he's doing with the new software and such. So until next week, as I always say, drink what you like and like what you drink. Take care. Bye.